This is the American Dream, Dustin Rhodes, son of a plumber, daddy, and you're listening to the Bob Culture Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into a very special all-out review episode of the BCP. Let's be real, last night, All Elite Wrestling indeed went all out with a bunch of surprises, a bunch of great matches. So we're going all out tonight with our all-star, All Elite stellar panel. Please welcome back to the show. You know him as hashtag lay editor-in-chief of thepopbreak.com, hashtag dad instincts, a BCP OG original member. My friend, Mr. Bill Botkin. Bill, welcome in, brother. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, man. I am. I didn't get a lot of sleep last night after being at the BCP compound watching the show last night because I was literally up till 2 o'clock in the morning watching media scrums and just watching debuts 5, 6, 7 times. It was an incredible night of wrestling.
Yeah, I love the media scrums, and I love how Tony is just sitting next to them at all of them, just like, look what I did. And that's awesome. Did you see the meme, like, find yourself someone the way Tony Khan looks at wrestlers or something like that? I was dying, man. It's great. But thank you, Bill, for making a few minutes, especially so late at night. Guys, thanks for tuning in. Let us know what you thought of the pay-per-view in the chat. And guys, please welcome back from the Closet Champion podcast. You know him as the Mr. Perfect of the BCP with a stellar record so far in our predictions panel, our good friend, Mr. Mike Mueller. Mueller, what's up, man? How are you?
Not too much, man. Thanks for having me back. I'm glad I wasn't on the prediction episode of this
one. Really?
My record would have taken a small hit, but not too bad.
Exactly. It would have reminded you every second of the day that you didn't get stuff right.
Well, here's the beautiful part. Kimmy and I, she messaged me and she goes, what are your picks? So I sent her my pick.
Forever.
And she goes, oh my God, we have every pick the same except for the women's battle royal. She took Tay Conti, which I held my tongue.
It's a solid pick. It was a solid pick.
And she's got other stuff to do first before she gets the title match. We were very similar yesterday. So
very interesting. Yeah, she's not here tonight because she was at a wedding. She texted me. She's like, yeah, I cried at the wedding. I was like, oh, really? She goes, yeah, because I missed All Out. So I thought that was pretty funny. And guys, please welcome to the show, making his long-awaited debut. You know him from belltobells.com. You know him from the Mr. Warren Hayes show. Please welcome in the long-awaited debut of Mr. Warren Hayes himself. We're not worthy.
Cut that shit out. No. But because
I've told him to do it for years. He doesn't.
But it's this is a shoot. This is a shoot. We have been trying to do this for the better part of, I feel like, 18 months. That's fair. Like our schedules have just been impossible. And you guys stream mostly on Thursdays. I stream on Thursdays. And sometimes, like, Rob will text me and be like, hey, can you come on the show? They're like, dude, you know this by now. You write me every quarter But honestly, I'm super glad to be here because it has been a long time.
I don't give up, man. I saw some stellar debuts last night. And I'm like, how are we going to top this on the BCP? You got to bring in Mr. Warren Hayes. Bay, man. But thank you for making the time, man. It's an honor. And But we'll see how you do here, man. Obviously, you have a stellar show on YouTube. But guys, let's get right into this right now. Let's talk about All Out last night. Now, Bill and I, we watched this together at the BCB compound, as you referred to it. That's never going away. Dude, there were times when we were on our feet. There were times where our jaws were literally dropped. There were times where we popped. There were times where
there was a time where I told someone to shut up because I didn't know what music was going to play.
Yeah.
When it was going to be Adam Cole, Mike Camp was screaming. I'm like, shut up. We don't know who's coming out. Yeah. Please let me hear this.
And my goddaughter is sleeping next door. But yeah, it was awesome.
She was fine.
Oh yeah. No, it was great. But let's start with Mueller first, man. What was your experience watching this one and your overall thoughts on what arguably may be the best pay-per-view of 2021 thus far?
I think it's definitely the best pay-per-view of 2021. I think it's the best pay-per-view AEW has done to date, even better than their first one before they were AEW. I just absolutely loved it top to bottom. I was really impressed. Nothing disappointed me. The matches, like even like the Big Show match and things like that, were they were exactly what they should have been to me. And that is my favorite thing about AEW is consistent, logical storytelling, mm-hmm. and both in ring and in an overall picture. It just everything made sense. Like I said, I didn't predict every match. It wasn't like it was super easy to call. I was blown away by not one, not two, but three big surprise debuts. They went all out, and that's a little cliche, but I was super impressed top to bottom. I was never bored. Even in the pre-show match, there was nothing where I never took my eyes off of the television screen. And that's not something that I can say during most wrestling pay-per-views. So I was very, very pleasantly surprised with every aspect.
Yeah. Very, very well said. Warren, what was your experience watching it, man? I know you were doing a little bit of travel and all that, but from what you got to sit down and watch, your experience watching it, what did you think of this thing, man?
Yeah, I was finally able to catch up today. I was swarmed by flight delays yesterday. I was able to make it on time for the last final three matches, which was dope, though. But listen, what Mike said is exactly my own feelings. There was something just awesome about the show last night. It was just about the energy. It was about the matches, the debuts, everything came together. But this was a moment in wrestling history and in time where we're going to look back in 10 years. We're going to see where the business is at. And this is going to be one of these immovable moments in history. Like they always talk about, on sci-fi shows, you can't move this time in history. You can't change this because
literally the last episode of What If.
Exactly. Yeah. This is where everything is going to move on. Cause this is a shift. This is a big deal. And it was a fantastic show from top to bottom. There was nothing bad about the show. We can nitpick. There's stuff where you can be like, but everything served its role. Everything worked. Everything connected. And you know what? It's fun to watch wrestling when it makes you feel good, right? Yeah. When you're just sitting there and you're just like, yeah, this is awesome. This is great. And you're popping and you're jumping out of your seats. I'm pretty sure we all jumped out of our seats at a couple of the same moments for sure. But that's what's great about it. And not having to be like, what are they trying to do? Not overcomplicating things. This was a simple wrestling pay-per-view that was designed to make the fans happy. It was just as simple as that.
I felt like a kid.
Yeah.
And it was in the best way.
Very well said.
Absolutely.
Very well said, gentlemen. I couldn't agree more. Bill and I literally, I put the picture on Facebook this morning of, I think it was me, Bill, and Mike all standing up at the same time at one point, just like staring at the TV. There's a couple guys like with their hands like this, doing the Britt Baker.
I just do this all the time.
But just being in that room and just watching some of the moments and the storytelling, we'll talk about that in a little bit. I really got excited about wrestling again. I've been very excited about tag team wrestling lately, which has never really been my thing outside of the Hardys. So it's been really, really fun. And I just think obviously being with the boys and watching that, we have a full capacity crowd. The pops from the crowd, the little bits of storytelling, the spots, the debuts. We'll talk about all that in a little bit. I mean, it's my 2021 pay-per-view of the year thus far. And with a possible match of the year candidate as well. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Bill, I was with you, man. But what did you think of the first class experience here at the BCP compound?
I mean, it was a good layout. I do enjoy a good slice of Elio's pizza. I'm not going to lie.
Once in a while, I was going to ask how the food was.
It was top flight all the way, baby.
It was bachelor pad, mac and cheese, Elio's pizza.
It really was.
Annie Smart brought some ribs, though, so we were good.
So for me, going into this show, I was kind of like, okay, this is, I want to see CM Punk and Darby. I want to see this cage match. Not Christian Cage, the tag team match in the cage. And that was it. And then they tacked on Eddie and Miro. And I was like, oh, cool. This is like a three-match show for me. I wasn't like in love with what they were doing. And then by the end of it, I'm just like, they blew my expectations out of the water because I was like, this is just, everything was simple to the point. It's just like, let's build stuff. Let's let people tear it up in the ring. And I think what crystallizes the night And it wasn't the debuts. It wasn't the great matches. What crystallizes how AEW is telling stories right now is Sting comes into the ring at the end of him, Punk and Darby. And we're in the room and everyone's like, oh, Sting's going to turn or Darby's going to turn. And I'm like, nope, they're going to just have Sting show a sign of respect. They're going to put Darby over and that's it. It's just simple. Let's not complicate things. Let's make the people happy, because we've been so, and I'm not going to make this an anti-WWE thing, but we've been, you know, trained through WWE, WCW and other promotions to, oh, the swerve, what's the swerve. And instead it's like, here's the story. Here's the motion. Here's the heart. And you're like, oh, cool. I like that. And we didn't really see like one thing, some stuff AEW has been knocked for in the past, like interference in matches, like Britt Baker, no interference, straightforward. Here's just people wanting to fight and win a title and win a match. And I'm just like, and everyone just, it just was, blew me away just how great it was. And I've been still thinking about this pay-per-view. I watched at your house. I bought the replay. Like, I spent $50 really? To buy it. Yeah. Cause well, if three people wanted to watch it, they usually get it through me anyway. No, but it's like, but I'm like, no, I want to have this in my collection so I can watch that cage match probably four more times, you know?
But if I can jump in, I think Bill, please. You know, I think Bill is right, because the idea here,
I don't often hear that. Yes.
I'm just angling to come back on the show at some point. Not going to lie. I'm just going to butter you guys up.
It's happening.
The idea that it's just simple, not complicated. Like you said, you know, the Sting comes in and it's just like fist bumps, respect, and that's it. You know, I know you said it yourself. We don't want to do compare and contrast. But right now, I think WWE provided us with the biggest example of why are you overthinking this when they did the Becky Lynch, Bianca Belair squash and the Becky heel turn, right? That's overthinking your product and what you're trying to deliver too much, trying to create something when all you needed to do and all the people wanted was Becky to come back, do something cool so that they could cheer some more. Not overly convoluted stories with, oh, well, you weren't seeing this coming. No, we didn't see it coming. Do you know why? Because we don't want it.
Because it doesn't make sense.
We didn't want it. Yeah, it's just that simple. Sting comes out. There's respect all around. I was talking with people who were telling me, you want to bet that Sting, CM Punk, and Darby Allin get into this this alliance? You know, maybe not an actual trio, but, you know, when CM Punk comes out and he gets overwhelmed, you'll have Darby and Sting run out to they'll have his back kind of thing. You know, that's the kind of stuff they do in AEW. And I'd be like,
wrestlers after... have friends. Wow.
Yeah. Exactly. Baby yes. faces have friends on top of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like it all makes. But I think it's hard to not make comparisons in this type of situation. And I'm not usually really privy on them, but AEW is a company that's it understands that they're a live show, and that they if the live crowd is into it and is excited and is hot, it's going to look like a hot product. So when you're at home on TV and you're seeing, you know, 7, 10, 15,000 people going, wow, it's just bonkers, you're going to get infected with it. Like, okay, what I'm watching is pretty cool. It is exactly like having a laugh track during a sitcom. If you hear the laugh track, you go, oh, joke, you know, kind of thing. Except here it's organic and natural.
Yeah,
I agree.
Very, very well said, man. That's why you're here, guys. And in the chat, everyone's saying last night was a really great night for pro wrestling as a whole. Yeah, I agree. Kristen in the chat saying, I guess, feed Warren's ego. Of course, that's why he's here. Of course. That's what we do here.
Oh, she's keeping me in check.
There you go.
Hey, darling.
Oh, there it is. I love it. But guys, let's talk about this. I love the storytelling throughout what was, again, arguably just the best pay-per-view. We had so much fun. Little things like Britt doing the Panama Sunrise, like, popped so big for that. Like, and again, going back to NXT where Adam did her move.
Can I jump in real quick?
Of course.
Because I think we're on a good... Because we got it. Because there's a theme here. Because I saw so many people tweet out, oh, they just had to do the Panama Sunrise to get a reaction from the crowd. And I'm like, this is pro wrestling.
That's your job. You're
trying to get a reaction.
That's your job. I mean,
yes. Go on. You know, how is this a bad thing?
And yeah.
That's all I wanted to say, because that kind of those kind of comments they blow my mind. It's like, oh, the AEW is making, you know, it's always doing shit to make their fans happy. Yes.
I was like, oh wait. Yeah.
How bad are the WWE brainworms at this point, where it's like you're expected to get aggravated at a product? I don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry, Rob.
No, I think there's just some people that are never satisfied no matter what. This but that's
some people just want to watch the world burn. Michael Caine. Michael Caine told me that. I almost said Michael Caine, and that's completely
different. It's very different.
That's a very different person.
No. Thank you, Warren, for jumping in. That's the soundbite right there, ladies and gentlemen.
There you go.
Britt. It really got you, like you said, Warren, just got you excited. We legit popped for those little things. I like storytelling in matches. We talk about, you know, obviously Penta and Rey taking on the Young Bucks as possibly one of the match of the year candidates for me personally. But I loved it when Penta like jumped in front of Rey to like defend his brother and protect his little brother. Like little things like that I liked. When Rey was on top of the cage and he kind of tightroped the top of the cage, not holding on to any of the cage. I was like, no, like. When I'm legit concerned about like their well-being, that's how you get invested. And I was telling Bill this last night when I was doing shameless promo, when I was doing the 80s wrestling virtual meet and greet things, a lot of the older guys and the legends, when they came in, they always said the same thing. They were always so frustrated with the way the business is now, because everyone back in the day before the social media and reality era believed that everything they did was real. Every punch, everything they did in and outside of the ring was real. Obviously, it's not like that these days, but there was that element of suspense last night when he was just walking across there, not even the jump off the top of the cage, which was amazing, but when he tightroped the top, like, I was like, what are you doing? You know, and that just that match was amazing. The visuals, I'm all about the camera angles, the visuals. You see Penta bleeding, almost reminding you of that Crimson Mask Britt Baker, but he has like the contact filled with blood, the mask ripped up. And
those guys, I wanted to take it off and watch the blood come
But just
to make you guys so uncomfortable, me go.
But it was awesome. Like, you know, there's a time and place for that, I feel. And that was perfect. And they're not flinching. They're just working the cameras. They're finding those cameras. And that match was so great. So there's little things like that. The push to Aubrey, I could go on and on with MJF. That was like a big moment that brought me right back into that match. There's so many great things. Go ahead, Bill. What do you got?
Here's the thing about AEW that I mean, as you could tell, not young, has been watching for a long time, but I'm assuming all of us have been watching for a long time. We should all know better. We should all know, like, oh, of course this person's going to win. Of course that person's going to win. This isn't going to go any further. But I always go back to the first Orange Cassidy, Chris Jericho match where Orange Cassidy did lose. Mm. But there were so many times where I sat there saying, he could do it.
Yeah.
He could win. How many times do we say, but my brain is like, he's not going to win. But that's the thing. They make you believe, even though you could sit there and say, like, this match is a slam dunk that this person is going to win. Like Miro and Eddie Kingston.
Yeah. I was
pretty much a slam dunk.
Yep.
But throughout it, you're like, oh, all of a sudden you became Britt Baker. You're like, oh my, is the Redeemer going to lose already? And it would have been awesome if he lost. And like, so that's the thing. You're like, it makes you, like you guys said, it like brings you back to being a kid again, but it makes you, because it takes you out of everything, you know, and it's done so well that you're like, I do believe this could happen. And that's the great thing. Excuse me, while I kill a spider right above me.
You let yourself get lost in the product. And that's something that when wrestling is at its best, that's what it's doing. It's getting us just to be completely lost. It's the same thing with any movie or TV show. We know that it's fake. We know that it's scripted, but when it's done well, we allow ourselves to just get lost and go on this journey.
Yes.
And pro wrestling, same way. We've been watching long enough. We're all hip to it. We're aware of what's going on. You know who should win, but yeah, you have those moments where when they do it well, it allows you to suspend what you should know and just go for the ride and enjoy it. And it reminds me, actually, the last time that I did that, really, where I just felt like I could go along for the ride, was at a house show, NXT house show, and it was Tommaso Ciampa versus Dijakovic for the championship. Ooh. And Dijakovic had not even appeared on TV yet. I had no idea who he was. It was my first time seeing
him. Just WWE at this point, but
not say really. What?
Yeah, neither does WWE apparently.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But it would like, so obviously this is a house show. It's Ciampa when he was the champion versus a guy most of us had not heard of, unless you were really into the indie scene, you didn't know who he was. So of course Ciampa's going to win, but there were like three moments throughout the course of that match where I go, are we about to see something unbelievable here? And of course we didn't, but it got me to let go and go along for the ride. And what more as a paying fan can you want than that?
Yeah. Very, very well said, man. I get to see the smiles on your guys' faces when you're talking about that. And it's like Bill said earlier, like sometimes it was hard to pick a winner in some of these because the booking was so good for this card. But I want to talk to you guys about moments outside of the debuts. We could talk about that all night. Warren, I'll throw it to you, man. What were some of the like spots that and this, let's be real, this pay-per-view had more spots than 101 Dalmatians. Let's be real, man. What were some of your favorite spots? Some of your favorite. That's pun disputed, Bill. You know that. What were some of your favorite spots and storytelling moments, Warren, in this one?
Off the top of my head, I think the first GTS that Darby ate, where he flew out of the ring, CM Punk so made good. That moment. Punk was like, no, he's like, I fucked up. You know,
I thought that was how I was like, he's going to lose now. I'm like, Punk's going to lose now.
Exactly. That's the moment where you're like, oh, okay, so this is where everything can flip. Cause I was of the opinion that you're not 7 years out of the business. He's in his hometown, his first match back. God bless Darby Allin, but he's not losing, you know, kind of CM Punk's not losing, you know?
Yeah.
But at that moment I was like, oh, wait a second. Okay. This might be exactly, you know, the thing that flips the tide. I thought that was an amazing, amazing spot. I really liked I love the interactions between Miro and Eddie Kingston. And I think I rate this match way higher than a lot of people do. I absolutely love the match. And I thought
it was great.
It was so good. And
everything I wanted.
The interactions that they had with each other, you know, Eddie is such a recently, and it's not even me, it's the guys over at Voices of Wrestling. I can't even take credit for it. Eddie Kingston is the modern day Dusty Rhodes. There is no other way to see that.
I never thought of that though.
That's a good comparison.
He is the 21st century everyman. He's a guy who came from nothing, scraped his way out of gangs, out of crime, the streets. He's had mental health issues. If there's anything more 21st century than people struggling with mental health, and he's had them bad and he's been open about them. And now he's finally running stadiums on a big time show years and years after that. That's what he is. And, you know, and he's not a super, he's not Nicky, you know, he's not.
Everybody knows an Eddie Kingston. Like you guys in New York and New Jersey, I'm sure you know thousands, but
I'm related even, to at least three of them.
Even in the Midwest, we all have them. Like, yeah, that's like you said, Warren, that's what's great about him.
And to me, that's his allure. That's his appeal. That's exactly what he is. He is absolutely the modern day Dusty Rhodes. There's no other way to see it. Like off the top of my head, those are outside, of course, of the debuts. And what do we consider Minoru Suzuki showing up? Because
a fucking demon.
I cried.
Did you really?
I bawled like a child. I was like, this is it's perfect. And they do the full entrance. Full music, the Kazunin Arai, the whole thing. And of course, everyone knows because AEW is hip to this kind of shit. They know what to do. It was fantastic. Like off the top of my head, those are my top moments.
That's amazing, man. And we're no strangers to crying in this house. Hashtag man tears at the BCB compound. Mike, what are some of your favorite moments? Because I know you're a details guy. You always pay attention. You're very good at getting into the minds of the booking and things like that, especially on the WWE end of things. So what were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, sadly, I'm too in touch with WWE booking. I don't know what that says about me. But so my two favorite moments from this pay-per-view, little moments, because you said I'm a details guy. And I love silly and fun. I'm very open with my love of silly and fun. The chicken fight in the pre-show between Hybrid 2 and Jurassic Express, when Jungle Boy got up on his shoulders. It was just like, I've seen so many wacky, silly things in wrestling. I don't know what time I've ever seen a four-man chicken fight in the middle of the ring. That was just something fun and unique. And anytime that I can be surprised and say, I've never seen that before, having watched wrestling for 32 years, like that says something. So I thought that was really cool, really unique. And I'm such a mark for Jungle Boy, but my favorite little moment of the whole event was in the CM Punk Darby Allin match. Just the general storytelling of, like, of course CM Punk is rusty, so he's going to get out wrestled, especially in the beginning, because Darby's doing this every day and Punk is not. Punk is bigger, but that doesn't matter, and he's maybe not taking Darby Allin super seriously. And there was a little moment that was he got arm dragged. I think it was his first arm drag. Mm-hmm. He looks at the camera and he smiles and he does a nod. And as soon as he did that, I go, I've seen that. Like, that's a great moment, but I go, I've seen that, and then it clicked. Bret Hart 123 Kid, I think it was a Monday Night Raw episode, and it was the exact, I don't know if that was a nod to it or if it's just, I mean, that's a natural way to tell a story, but it's the veteran that went, oh, okay, all right, I see you and I respect you, and it's face versus face. And it was just a little moment that really led us into where the person was at, Bret Hart in that case, CM Punk in this case. And it was beautiful storytelling, but that little moment, it hooked me. And those little moments, those little things are what I think CM Punk does better than almost anybody, especially in this day and age. So I was really happy to see that he could still tell that in-ring story. He didn't miss a beat on that one.
Wow, man. Very, very well said. And I think I read this morning that they were doing like little tributes to that match. So you probably noticed it as it happened. Like, I had no idea, man, but you know that kind of stuff. But it was very well done. Bill, I'm very, you know, obviously I watched it with you, man, but I'm very curious, like, what was going on in your head? Like, what moments really stood out to you in terms of spots and storytelling?
There's one moment where Punk just sits up and avoids the coffin drop. I'm like, why isn't anyone else just thought of that?
Laughs to himself. Yes.
Yeah. But I love the ending of the ending sequences when both he and Darby get overconfident and it ends up playing against each other. Like, oh, Punk's going to lose. He got too confident. Darby. So I thought that was really great. But the one that stood out to me, and I've got a bunch of others, but when Brandon Cutler tosses that bowling bag, into the cage, and everyone's like, what's in the bag? And I said, I know exactly what's in that bag. It is a sneaker with thumbtacks on the bottom. And everyone's like, why would that be? I'm like, because they famously super kick Candice LeRae in Pro Wrestling Gorilla with it. And it's a famous picture of her just caught, drenched in blood. And it was like a big moment in her career. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I guarantee you they're going to do this. And they did. And I was like, I was like, that is such a deep cut that anyone who's never seen that will be like, oh my God, it's a sneaker covered in thumbtacks. But for the people who know, you got it. Just a little bit more. That little reference in there. I love the Bucks do that a lot. They were doing this. They were doing a lot of that, like during the pandemic, you know, shouting out Motor City Machine Guns, still teasing that could happen one day, which I really hope it does. But other little moments for me, Orange Cassidy getting fired up to get Chris Statlander
that was fun.
Get back in the ring. And it's just like, again, just adding a little moment that added to, this is a big moment. If this guy can get that worked up,
right,
for not in his own match. So I thought that was really cool. Although it has nothing to do with the match, but Lana's reply tweet to Miro saying, these nuts have been redeemed, and she says, come home, I will make sure they're redeemed as well. And I'm just like, she never has to show up in AEW. But if she keeps responding and just playing in that universe, it's the best thing she's ever done. It's great. There was a couple other small things that destroyer off the top rope in the cage match was mind-boggling. And then the Thunder Ruby Riot, Ruby Soho confrontation at the end, where, and in every, because what happened there was, you know, AEW does get and I think rightfully so, criticized for their women's division and how they are doing things. But in that moment, everyone seemed to get on their feet and be like, this is a fight. This mm-hmm. is real. This means a lot. And when they're going at it, I mean, we were all saying, like, I hope they both go over. And then Tony Khan's got to fumble on the microphone and say, hey, we have to have a winner. Paul White, you don't have a match tonight. We're having you guys wrestle. And it would have been phenomenal. And then I'm sure there's like, and the fact they also gave Malakai Black a promo to put over a match on Dynamite, which
I love that. I love that they do that. It's not the first pay-per-view they do that. And I
can't remember ones they've done that with, but like that one just stuck out to me because one, I've always been a Dustin Rhodes fan since I was a little kid. And I'm sure if Dustin Rhodes heard that, he's like, you're not that young. But he's like, but to do that, I'm just like, wow, that's special. And like, and yes, yeah, Suzuki coming out. Like everyone in your place, Rob, was like, I don't really know who this guy is. I'm like, I don't know. He's going to kill somebody. Yeah. You know?
Dude, it was crazy. There were so many great moments. And I do want to ask you guys, match of the night, we'll do kind of a rapid fire for me. Obviously, it was Lucha Bros Bucks and that possible match of the year contender, as I keep saying. Just go to the comments real quick. Thanks for staying up, guys. I didn't think this many people would be in. Joe Hale chiming in saying Orange Cassidy versus Punk or versus Darby would be a great dream match. Yeah, I'm sure the fans would like that little face versus face action. Someone else saying Lucha Bros. Entrance was amazing. The tag title match was match of the night. I agree. The Brett reference, yeah, that was very cool earlier. Thunder Rosa sold it perfect. Can't wait for that match. Yeah, so many good things. Yeah. We don't really do pay-per-view reviews. I can't remember the last time we've done one. We usually do the predictions panel. But we had to get on and talk about this. So for me, obviously, match of the night, Lucha Bros. I haven't been this into tag team wrestling for a long time. I did pick Lucha Bros to win. I was so happy.
The only one.
I got that. It's the story of my life. But I was very happy about it. Warren, what was your match of the night?
For me, it was CM Punk and Darby. I can definitely appreciate the astounding feats that the Jacksons and Penta and Phoenix put on. Ray Phoenix is one of my favorite wrestlers, period. But look, it all boils down to a question of taste at this point. And I had built up the anticipation. I like the Young Bucks in certain circumstances, and there are other circumstances where I don't. I like and every time they fight the Lucha Bros, I feel like I'm disconnected from everyone else because it doesn't hit the spots for me. It's not like when the Jacksons fight FTR. It's not like when the Jacksons fight Omega and Paige, where I'm like, these guys are brilliant. Now it's like, okay, it's the spot show. And that's cool. That's it. Like, I don't want, I'm not suddenly putting on, you know, becoming Jim Cornette. Let's get this out of the way.
Even with the hat.
Does look like a tennis racket in the background there.
Yeah, well, okay. I guess I'll hide my props better next time. But because one thing that AEW does a very good job at is providing different types of wrestling for their audience. And I think that satiates very, very different bases. Like starting off with Kingston and Miro, that was for me, guys. That was a match that was for me. Sorry, the three of you. That was my match.
All right, okay? You can have it.
And the Lucha Bros was something else, and it was for a crowd that really enjoys that type of those types of athletics and that spots. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, holy shit! Like I'm like the Destroyer is just, and I'm not poo pooing it. Au contraire, I'm like this is fantastic stuff, but it doesn't make it for me. Now that I got that aside, Darby and CM Punk told the perfect veteran returning to the ring story, from top to bottom. From like Mike said, like he pointed out the Bret Hart 1-2-3 kid spot. From that moment on, you got it. They're like, this is what they're gonna do throughout the match, and it was good, basic psychological professional wrestling. Everything meant something. There were no useless holds. There was no throwaway gimmicks in the match. Everything fell into place. That is that's my kind of match where
no,
I'm like,
no bullshit in the match either.
Exactly. Yeah. I adored it. To me, that easily the match of the night for me.
Very, very well said, man. And yeah, like again, like you talk about like the spot fest and the other match, like I came in really late, Ruthless Aggression era. So like Mysterio was my guy. So I was all about like the high flying. So for me, like you said, that match catered to a lot of people. That's my wheelhouse right there. Punk Darby for me wasn't my favorite thing, but the storytelling really got me into it.
Sure.
How many times, Bill, did I say last night? I'm like, Punk's being cocky, you know, so that part of the match, the psychology and all that, that really got me invested. And you
walked out of the arena, the ramp, and you're like, Punk's being cocky. I'm like, dude, the match hasn't started yet.
Yeah.
I
wasn't wrong. Thank you. You beat me to it. That doesn't mean I was wrong though. Mike, what were some of your favorite moments or matches rather?
So for me, it's between those two, because Phoenix is my favorite wrestler in AEW. Phoenix, I think, is the greatest luchador of all time. No disrespect to Rey Mysterio, but I will. That's a hill I will die on. I don't think anyone does what Phoenix can do. But again, ultimately,
El Hijo del Vikingo. I'm sorry, I'm mispronouncing his name. He might want to say hello, though.
Son of a bitch. When can he get across the border?
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. That guy is something else.
He can go lose to Phoenix. That's fine.
Wow. Oh, no. I don't disagree with that either.
Rey Mysterio 2021 or Rey Mysterio 2000? No, go ahead.
Ever. I mean it. Wow. I'm watching old Nitros as we speak. So I'm seeing Rey Mysterio in his ultimate prime, and I would take Phoenix. Growing up from the golden era on, it was really, you got to hook me with the storyline. And like Warren said, that the best storytelling match of the night was CM Punk and Darby Allin. So that was probably my favorite. And real quickly, I just want to say, because I didn't mention this in moments, it wasn't a moment, but I had a light bulb moment where there's something that I really like. People say that there's too many factions in AEW, and
not enough for me
either. And my point is, when you have a talent pool this deep, it's like you gotta find a way to get people out there and get them exposure. Mm-hmm. And when watching the buy-in match, I go, you know what? I love Matt Hardy office or whatever it is, little group, because essentially they're jobbers, but they all have personalities. They all get a moment to shine, and we know who they are and we care about them. And I went, that is, and I do not romanticize the Attitude Era. I think it's the most overrated era in wrestling. But one thing that they did 100% right was they got you to care about everybody on the card top to bottom. So look at that Attitude Era, things like you had top tier factions like DX and all that stuff, but then you have Nation of Domination and Los Pericas and DOA and the Oddities and the Brood and Right to Censor. And you have all these other
squad.
Say what?
Job Squad.
The Job Squad. Come on, man. Al Snow. And I realize that that's something that AEW is doing right now that I wish other brands did more, is when you have so much talent on your roster, how are you not finding a way to at least get them on camera? And like you said, wrestlers have friends. Why can't they just be, if nothing else, if they're just a dude who hangs out on this outside of the ring with Powerhouse Hobbs, at least they're doing something.
And you know? And then what happens?
Hook is the truth and the future.
It
could be fucking incredible.
I like Hook for entirely different reasons.
I thought you might, but you're not the only one, by the way. Not me. I'm just saying the internet.
I don't judge. It's cool though.
Listen, happily married man. I'm fine. Hook's a good looking dude.
He's a good looking dude.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But the factions thing, that's ultimately what their purpose is. And look at how somebody, because you also have the Wingmen. The Wingmen is my favorite. It's probably right after the Dark Order, probably my favorite gang in AEW. And the thing is that once one of these guys gets into a feud, they all do. So then, like you said, then you have all this talent pool. So then maybe next week you'll have two other guys from the stable fighting as opposed to the two main dudes who are having the feud, you know?
Like, and it's not just a random match. It has meaning.
It has meaning because these people are friends. They have each other's backs and they're just yangs and they don't like each other. They just, you know, the Orange Cassidy and the best friends, they don't like, well, what, you know, Wheeler like Yuta him. Doesn't have, you know, he doesn't have a really any sincere issues with anyone on in the Matt Hardy organization.
Chuck Taylor tells him to go.
Exactly. Just like, oh, okay, we don't like these guys. Okay, cool. And he's just there and that's about it. I love
I
it.
Do like I the fact too. Even the wingmen, like the heels, like they do like each other. They're actually like, the odd couple group, but they're friends and they hang out and they have it. It's not like, oh, I don't like these guys. I'm just here because I have to be. It's just like they kind of like each other. And I'm like, it's kind of like, obviously they're heels, but it's kind of endearing at the same time.
Yeah.
I would never hang out with them, but no. You know, I'd be like, hey guys, have a nice day at the office.
And it's one of the greatest dumb excuses that people come up to hate on AEW. There's too many factions. It's turning away the casuals. I'm like, well, how? Yeah. Someone needs to explain why too many groups is a deterrent from turning the TV off. I don't get it.
I don't know. People loved Game of Thrones and there was a lot of characters there until the end.
And some of them stay on 2 months. You get really attached to them and 2 months in and then they're gone.
You're not wrong. Oh God. You guys are hitting it right on the head. Real quick in the chat.
We could do a whole Wingman podcast, I'll be honest with you.
Oh, man.
And we know who we can thank for that. Christian Cage. He put them together.
He well, did.
Perfect segue, man. And I didn't know that. That's interesting. Perfect segue. Also ask
my favorite match, but okay.
Well, that's I'm taking it there right now, but that's a perfect segue, Bill, because in the chat, they're saying that was Christian's best singles match ever. Very interesting. Bill, we'll throw it to you. What was your favorite match of the night?
Oh, God. I feel like I have to address that first thing first.
Please.
I disagree with that statement because I like the Rampage match better myself. But I also feel that was an underrated. I feel like that's a match people are going to go back to on a rewatch. Be like, you know what? That match was really good because we were all burnt out / waiting for surprises. And that had an unfortunate positioning. But that was a very good match. But I still think Christian, the first Rampage match between those guys was much better in my opinion. My pick is the tag team match for different reasons than the spots, because I've seen this match multiple times in PWG. I've seen it in AAA a few times. We've seen it in AEW. I think this was their best match as a foursome because it told a different, because the expectations, in my opinion, were so low because people are like, all right, we're going to do these guys again. We'll put them in a cage. Even Kyle, who runs an AEW podcast, was like, meh. It's a match. It'll be good.
I was excited for it.
I mean, people were like, oh, this will be a good match. But the story they told more was the Lucha Brothers, there was no way they were going to win. And it was a more physical match than they're usually. It wasn't just, yes, there were crazy spots. But like you said, there was emotional spots. We're seeing the Bucks getting more violent and getting more desperate. And the Lucha Brothers sacrificing themselves for each other. And it's just, and they became, for the first time, the Lucha Brothers. I mean, I might be talking out of school a little bit here. I felt this was the first time the people were not just cheering for the Lucha Brothers because they do cool moves. They were cheering for the Lucha Brothers because they cared and they want to see them win. And they're like, they were emotionally invested in them. It wasn't just the sizzle. It was the steak. They really wanted to see them win because they were putting it all on the line and they were selling like they were getting killed at every moment. And that's not something we see. It would be like spot, boom, spot, boom, like you were saying, Warren. So there wasn't that emotional tissue that was connecting everything. And now there was. And then when Rey Fénix goes to top, everyone's like, oh, we really don't want you to die. I saw that. You know, one show you were on and you have like four kids, please stop. And he did it anyway. And like when they won, because everyone I think was expecting, and AEW I think did a really good job with this, is like they set up LA, you know, Proud and Powerful wins. And they're like, you know what we're coming for next? I was like, ah, and I was that guy. I was like, they're going to beat him in Arthur Ashe. And listen, they could beat the Lucha Brothers at Arthur Ashe. That's fine. But I think everyone's like, oh, that's what's going to happen. They'll beat the Lucha Brothers. It's fine. And they didn't. And I think that was the surprise. Everyone's like, what? Who? No one was thinking they were going to win. And
besides Rob.
Besides Rob. Thirstcraft Jones over there. Thanks a lot, pal. They won, and that's where everyone's like, holy shit, they won. The elite, this dominant faction, they've lost more belts. But then, of course, that comes all way around at the end. But so that's my match of the night, because it wasn't what I was expecting from a match I've seen a whole bunch of times.
Very well said. Mike, did you politely raise your hand?
I did.
Dude, you can pull rank here. Please.
My third grade teacher installed this in me, and I'll never forget it. another brilliant moment that none of us talked about was MJF doing the psych out with the Jericho countdown. Before he came out, that was kiss.
We popped for that. Well, when they started doing it, we're so like, oh, hard. Jericho's doing this. I was like cooking.
I go to the bathroom, I and then everyone's out. Like, oh my god, I gotta run down.
It didn't count like, down. And then what did it say after the countdown? Like
Jericho's last match. Yeah, that was it was so good, because then it took you a second, because you're used to seeing Jericho after the thing, and then so good.
Yeah, well, Rob, I'm gonna hijack for one sec. So Jericho wins. What do you guys think of Jericho beating MJF, and he doesn't, you know, his last match is, you know, he could still wrestle in AEW, but he beats MJF this whole feud. What do you guys take?
We just want to sing Judas next week. Vax's like, we got to sing Judas in New Jersey. Got to sing in New York. We're good.
Sing it every day in my car. It's fine. but it's like, so that's my thing. Cause I felt like the way they've told the story has been a little ass backwards, where it's been like, we did Blood and Guts first. Then we did Stadium Stampede. Then it's like, well, he has to beat him, but he didn't lose the Inner Circle. So I felt like, well, I've enjoyed the labors. It's felt like a weird way of telling this story. Now MJF loses another big one on pay-per-view. And that's why I want to get your guys' opinion, how you feel about it. Because that's the one I don't have an actual concrete opinion on.
Yeah.
The match itself was super fun to watch.
Was great. But I've had a really hard time understanding where this story has been going the whole time. I keep thinking it's going to be over, and then we keep getting new chapters and things keep changing and all stuff goes on. When it first was announced, I immediately went, oh, well, Jericho's going to win because he's not going to retire. But it's pro wrestling. So how many retirement matches did Ric Flair lose? Yeah. So, you know, that doesn't mean anything. So then I start thinking about how I thought it was going to be MJF. I thought MJF being able to beat Jericho four times, or what would have been five times, because they had the restart the match, kind of a dusty finish. I thought that was going to be MJF's like thing for a year, like how even way after Brock Lesnar and Undertaker were over, Paul Heyman kept billing Brock Lesnar as the guy that broke the streak, that beat the streak, because it's this never ending fuck you heat. I was trying so hard not to swear. That was the first FU heat. Then he just had it and could ride it. I thought MJF was going to be able to do that, and he would go on to other feuds, and Jericho would be on commentary, or he would be touring with Fozzy, and MJF would still be going around saying, I beat Chris Jericho five times and nobody beat me. Like it's so perfect for MJF. So I convinced myself that he's going to win, just so he has that I did it forever kind of thing. But it twisted on it. I don't like being wrong, so I didn't like Jericho winning. Wow. But I don't know. Apparently, it's still got to keep going, right?
No.
Oh, man.
No.
But it could have been over at the last one.
Go ahead, Warren.
I have very strong opinions about this whole thing. I agree. I think this whole feud was back-asswards.
Nice.
There was nothing... I can appreciate that at some point they break, you know, the factions sort of break apart into their little splinter feuds, and I can appreciate that. I thought that I finally went, whew, okay. But I really thought that after the five labors, we're done, you know, because even on a psychological level, I don't understand why Chris Jericho comes back the week after, picks up a microphone and said, this guy beat me three times, but I have to prove to myself that I can beat this guy. So like, he beat you three times, not once, not twice. And it's like, he did beat you three times. I don't know if I can look at myself in the mirror if I can't beat this guy. He beat you three times. Even if you beat him once, he beat you three times. You're still going to have to look at yourself in the mirror and say to yourself, this guy beat me three times. I beat him once though. Is that enough for you, Chris? Is that how fragile your ego is, Chris, that all you need to say is, I beat MJF that one time, and whoa, I'm ready to go, man. Come on, let's be Ayatollah and Rock and Roll is back, baby. You know, I'm doing all sorts of impersonations at once here, but
I like it.
On a basic level, I didn't understand why we needed to go down this route. I was satisfied with MJF locking it up and being, I am the guy, and I'm really big on these long-term things. This is one of the reasons I love New Japan so much, is because they always have this history to dive into. I love the idea, or loved the idea, that MJF had Chris Jericho's number and that Chris Jericho couldn't do a thing about it. I love this. And if he had been the guy to take him out on top of that, not only 4-0, but took the guy's career, like Mike said, this is MJF's claim to fame for the rest of his career. He can be 63 years old and being in the middle of an AEW ring at AEW 73 with a microphone in his hand going, God bless Chris Jericho's soul, but he could never beat me, you know, kind of thing. It's something he could have owned forever, and AEW could have come back to at any given moment. On top of that, they could have unretired Jericho for that one, you know, that one comeback. They could, honestly, I'm disappointed in the result, and I hated the finish. I hate dusty finishes. I think they're stupid. It doesn't make any sense to me. And thank God this wasn't an evening of fuck finishes for AEW, because if there had been at least one other similar ending on that card and no other ref came out to reverse the decision, I would have flipped.
Yeah.
But honestly, this match was, for me, was the biggest letdown, because I can live with my booking not being on point, but if you're going to give Jericho the win, don't do that. Don't do that. Cause yeah, now it feels like, oh, we have to go back to it, because MJF's got to get his win back. Can we move on? Can MJF move on? Because I think he's good.
So the Very other thing, awesome. I was like, I picked Jericho to lose, because it's like, well, we got to cycle the guy out because we got all these new people. We can't have everyone there. So I was like, well, if he loses, if he wants to have one last match, you do what AEW does best. You do the lights out match. And he could have his retirement match. It's not an officially sanctioned AEW match, but it's his last match. But I also think that on Wednesday, or whenever we see Jericho next, they just take him out. And we don't see Jericho for a long time. And I feel like that'll be fine. Like, or, you know, or Jericho says goodbye. And MJF now has this new thing to do what MJF does best about. He bitches. And he's going to bitch about being screwed. And he's going to somehow, someone's going to come out and be like, well, I'm going to shut you up now. And there's his next feud. And that could be, and you know, he could come out, cut a blistering promo on how he's the face of the company. Tony Khan, even in his meet. And this would be the perfect time for MJF to say, hey, in the media scrum, Tony Khan said, I'm a locker room leader. I'm not a young star. I am the star. Yet you screwed me. And he just goes on something like that. And you could have something along that line. Also, there's a lot of work that has to be done with the Pinnacle, because we don't know if half the Pinnacle is even going to be there now because of the FTR injury. We don't know if they're going to be back. So yeah. We don't know what's going to happen there.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about the Pinnacle a little bit amongst all this. And no disrespect, and obviously there's other things going on there. So we'll see how this gets back on track. Maybe we see that MJF-Aubrey feud play out. I kid. But we love Aubs. We'll be seeing her in a couple weeks.
I really want to see MJF and Punk. That's my number one. That's my number one want. I thought that was going to be his first feud. I feel
like he's going to have... Why I keep thinking, because Arthur Ashe, it'll be MJF and Kingston.
And Arthur Ashe would be good. Yeah.
We'll see what happens, guys.
Get wild.
It's going to be very interesting. But and thank everyone for staying up this late. Guys, thank you so much for making the time. I did want to touch on this before we got out of here. Obviously, the big returns, end of the night. I'll just run through our experience. Bill, we see kind of Kenny Omega get on the mic, and we're like, okay. Like, you know, we don't have the copyright. He's on the mic. He's talking. More people are coming out. Things are happening. this is obviously set up for something. For what? Is it a Hangman Page return? Is it, are they going to pull the trigger on Adam Cole coming out? Obviously, the new music hits, which I will just say might be Ruckus's best work to date. I really like the music. It was the first thing on my phone this morning when I woke up. It was amazing. I like the riff is very similar to the Undisputed, which gives him the musical cue to hit the boom, the Adam Cole baby he can hit out of nowhere. I thought it was great. The Daniel Bryan trap remix. I don't know why you go that direction with Daniel Bryan, but I digress. That's all music stuff. I thought the return on top of return was actually pretty good. I said earlier all week, you got to keep your foot on the gas right now. And that's what they're doing. It was amazing to see Adam Cole not only return, but in that press conference, having a smile on his face the whole time. You could just see the genuine excitement. And my only issue was, and it wasn't even really an issue, I said to Bill, I was like, did we kind of cut Cole's debut short because Brian came out and then there was a little bit of a retreat from Cole at the end of that? I was like, did we kind of muddle everything? But these are guys that we know. So I won't get too nitpicky on that, but I thought it was just really, really good. And to just live in the moment and rewind, not knowing for sure that they were going to be there and having them come out, we had two legitimate pops and it was just a great moment. And I'm excited to see Adam Cole's trajectory moving forward, and D-Bry as well, or Brian Danielson moving forward.
You had three legitimate pops. Don't forget, had Ruby Soho.
Yeah. Ruby. And then the other one we talked about earlier. Yeah.
Sure. So, I'll just do Ruby first because you were mentioning the other one. That was the one we were all kind of like,
yeah,
is she going to, you know, you're like, because you're watching those vignettes, you're like, is it going to be Chicago? Could it be New York? Like, part of it was filmed in Jersey. And I'm just like, maybe, you know, or maybe she just, maybe that's just for something else. And for her to come out, like I've been saying for over a year, I'm like, AEW's women's division needs that veteran who's been on TV, who's just going to make everyone around her better. And she's great.
Ding, ding, ding.
And like the fact that half of the WWE was tweeting about she deserves it, she's the best. And I'm just like, why did you fire her? She seems so nice. Like, you know,
she's beloved. That's the thing. Yeah. That backstage, everyone loves her. And this is exactly, again, the kind of super influence that you need in for your women's division at the same time. And I mean, we all saw it coming. I don't think it was that big of a surprise. Like Bill said,
I thought it was just maybe will they do it here or
yeah,
not?
That's it. Yeah. The question was, are they doing it tonight or at Arthur Ashe?
Ultimately.
But honestly, like there is no more reason for AEW to go soft on their women's division moving forward. You know, I sat through, you guys know, Christ, I co-run a women's wrestling website. So you know how I feel about AEW and their women's division at this point. And I've sat through, and Kristen has sat through tons and tons of apologists saying, give it time. Oh, the pandemic hit. All of their women are all in Japan now. So what are they going to do? Oh, well, they could hire more women during the pandemic, like they were hiring Matt Hardy and Brian Cage and so on and so forth. Oh, but just give it time. Hang on. The women aren't ready. Well, get them ready or hire women that are ready, right? And that's what we've been that's what we've been saying all along. Get women who are ready to go for your TV. If you hire a bunch of Julia Harts, God bless her, she has a great look, but she's as green as goat shit. You know,
I didn't know goat shit green. All right.
Well, hey, you learn something new every day.
It's like geese.
If all you have is Julia Harts, of course your division is going to stink. People are going to be happy to see the reactions, but then they're going to see them in the ring. They're going to, what the hell is going on kind of thing. They have no more reason to not provide to give them time. They have the depth because we're talking about Ruby Soho, but we're talking about Serena Deeb, who is there as well. And Serena Deeb is a certified trainer, plus has delivered one of the absolute best women's matches in AEW this year. You've got Britt, getting better. Total She's star. A star. You've got Emi Sakura, and don't shed Emi aside. We all remember the Freddie Mercury gimmick. It was, you know, whatever it was. Emmy is a trainer. She has trained so many women in Japan. She knows her shit. She would not have been brought over by Kenny if he didn't have complete confidence in what she could do with the division. So on top of, and then you have the success stories. Then you have the Ty Conchis, who is super over, and since being in AEW has become fantastic. She was squandered in the PC trying to get her to adapt to their weird whatever, you know, not letting her grow. Now she has room, and now she's a star. You're going to have Anna Jay, who's going to come back. You've got Red Velvet, that's a success story. You have Kylan King, who's a success story. You have Big Swole on top of that. There, Statlander. There is, and oh, am I forgetting Thunder Rosa? I apologize, no. Rosa, if you're watching this.
Love Thunder Rosa.
And, like, honest to God, there is zero reason for AEW to be sitting on their division, giving them one match a week anymore. There is zero, or just feuds surrounding the belt, or we'll give them a tournament, but we'll put them on the YouTube show. Fuck that shit. Now moving forward, they put too much effort into this. Ruby Soho is the cherry on top of it at this point. They have to push it forward. And if they, just like we saw at Empower 2 weekends ago, if you make your women show, you make your women's productions come across.
Don't do that, Rob. Seriously? You know what's gonna happen.
Yeah, you'll get demonetized. You'll get us kicked off the stream.
That's not what I'm talking about.
if you treat your women seriously, and you make them look like $1 million, and you let the women work in their style, in their way on top of that, you're going to get gold. And as long as you don't treat them seriously, the fans are going to treat it seriously. It's just as simple as that.
Well, I mean, the proof is in the ratings. I mean, if you look at the women's segments, they're always highly rated. They're always highly watched. So keep doing them, and you'll get more ratings, and you'll get more money.
I'm pretty sure we don't need a 8-minute promo back and forth between MJF and Jericho every fucking week. Like, I enjoy a good MJF promo. I enjoy a good Chris Jericho promo. But every week, come on, guys. Come on.
My match of the year was Britt Thunder Rosa. Now, obviously, this tag match coming into the conversation as well. And I enjoyed the booking for the Women's Rumble, but we're getting a little off track.
So, I was going to say, the Ruby Soho debut, excellent. And the fact that, again, the media scrum, they shot a little angle there where her and Britt throwing some words. Great. Good. That's what you should be doing. And Tony Khan was talking about, I was interested to see, because he agented the Rumble. Well, I'll just call it the Rumble. And he said, I'm trying to weave every woman in it to have a story of some point, of some sort. And we saw that Diamante and Nyla Rose, they got a little secret friend handshake. If they're going to be a faction, they're going to be unit. Great. Bunny and Allie have a real life friendship. Make them a unit. Let's go. That's cool. And if Ruby's going to be like the straw that stirs a drink, even better. But to get to the big debuts of Adam Cole, like, I honestly, people were like, oh, it's going to happen. I'm like, I was one of those guys. I'm like, I don't know. Because we just didn't. And when he showed up and when he said dead, I'm just like, fuck. Let's go. Let's do this. But what I loved about this, and I said this to Rob, was they recycled a gimmick in AEW. They re-ran the Matt Hardy, Brody Lee debuts, where everyone thought Matt Hardy was going to be the exalted one. It was Brody Lee. And everyone's like, holy shit. No one saw this coming. And it breaks my heart. He's not in AEW and he's not even around to be a part of this, because he would be such a huge part of this. And I hope they do a huge thing for him when they go to Rochester. But then Matt Hardy shows up. But this was like Adam Cole as the red herring to be like, okay, we got Adam Cole and that's it. And then it's just like, he's taken way too long. And here comes Bryan Danielson, and it's so good to say Bryan Danielson again. Man, it's been way too long. I hope the American Dragon moniker comes back. And he had the great line, CM Punk is here to help people. I'm here to kick people's heads in. And I'm like, fuck, yes. That's what I want to see. Let's see. He's obviously going to train people. He's going to help people. Of course, he's Daniel Bryan. That's what he does. He pitched an angle with Drew Gulak, who, where's that guy at this point? But it's like, him coming out and we're going to get him with the Elite, and but then him important. And I think this is a very important thing, is that everyone's like, oh, this is WCW. And because there's so many illusions you can make to WCW with AEW, they're going to forget all their guys. Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus have been in the ring with every one of those guys, with CM Punk, with Sting, with all those guys, and they've been on that side of being helped. And now Daniel Bryan was in the ring with them. They're putting their young guys with them, and I don't think any of us have lost our love for, well, maybe some people have, for Hangman Page being the guy to beat Kenny, because people want that, and we want the Dark Order to be friends again. So it's just like all these guys are coming in, but I don't think AEW has lost sight of what's got them to this point. And Daniel Bryan even said that in the promo. He says, I'm not here without day one guys like John Moxley, Chris Jericho, and everyone else who started this company. That's important, because I feel like everyone has a criticism of like, they're just signing people. They don't care about the people who were with them through the pandemic or anything like that. I think it's a bunch of shit. So I think this is only going to bolster things. And I love Adam Cole. I've been on record saying Adam Cole, to me, when I first time I saw him, like, that guy has all the potential in the world to be the next Ric Flair. And he could be that for AEW. And because he kind of was that for NXT. And I just can't wait to see what he does. And it's going to be fantastic. And AEW, all the eyes are on them. And apparently more people coming their way. And let's go.
Yeah, I love everything that both you guys said. Warren, obviously, shining the spotlight on the women. Obviously, a big proponent of the Northeast women indie scene up here. Let's get Lady Frost in the mix. Let's get Riley Shepard out there. I'd love to see all these great talents on AEW and AEW Dark now that they're coming into town. So just putting that out there. Got to shout out the Vicious One, of course. Mike, let's throw it to you, man. What did you think about this return of Adam Cole, getting that Adam Cole payday?
Yeah, so... First, I want to say I love Ruby Soho coming back because I called it, and I got to beat Kimmy because of it. Very important. That was probably my favorite return of the night, just for the results. Adam Cole, I popped when it happened, but I might get raked over the coals for this. The Adam Coles for nice. This, Bill. Nice. As soon as he did his heel turn, I went, oh, well, Daniel Bryan's going to come out now, because they're not going to end it on a sour note. So personally, I was disappointed with the way that it went down, because it ruined the Bryan Danielson return for me. Because I, on my podcast, I didn't think either of them were coming back. I thought Ruby was coming back. I thought they were going to save him, kind of not for too long, but spread them out a little bit. And I was fine with them both coming back if you were going to do it right and surprise me twice. But as soon as he turned heel and joined in with the Elite, I went, oh, Daniel Bryan's coming out now. And that, so when the music hit, I was like, instead of going, yeah, I was like, oh yeah. So that was my one little disappointment. Like Warren said at the very beginning, we're nitpicking on a brilliant, brilliant night of wrestling.
Yeah, sure.
But that was my one thing where I just, to me, it was very telegraphed. That it wasn't going to end with Adam Cole once they started the love fest.
Sometimes I'm okay with the telegraph, though. I was okay with the telegraph, because for me, it was the same thing with Punk debut, because it's just like when Tony Khan essentially is like, yeah, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But the whole time I was just like, because part of me was like, maybe they're not going to do, because I don't know, because I'm always like, oh, it's not going to happen. It's the Irish in me. I'm just like, fuck, it's not going to happen. And then, like, you know, I get all doomsayer, and then I go drink, and it's crazy. No, I'm kidding. The sort of. And then, like, I was kind of like, they're not going to do it. And then when they did, I'm like, fuck, they did do it. That was me. But I can see where you're coming from, because it was, for some people, just the telegraph just, it took the impact off of it.
Yeah, it just, and because it was a pay-per-view too, whereas if this was an episode of Dynamite, I could see them ending with Adam Cole and the Elite all being buddy-buddy, and then we go on to something else. But because it's a pay-per-view, because it was Chicago, and then also in talking about telegraphing, when CM Punk and Darby Allin wasn't the finale, I went, well, someone's coming back, because they're not going to end the pay-per-view with Kenny Omega winning. And Kenny Omega was going to win. So I go, well, someone has to come back. And then Cole came back and I went, oh, okay, great. That's cool. That's awesome. Yay, Adam Cole. And then he turned heel and I went, oh, and so now we're getting Daniel Bryan too. Okay.
I think your point is valid, as opposed to other comments where I heard, you know, where you read and see people going, well, why did they put all their surprises on one night? You know, they should have stretched them out over weeks. Why should they have? Oh, is it because that over the past two decades, we've only had one wrestling company doing the things one way? Maybe, you know, it's kind of cool to try things a little differently. And I don't know anyone who watched All Out and who is excited about it, who is not excited to watch Dynamite on Wednesday this week. So
very true. Fair counterpoint.
So if you're, that to me is the sign of a hot product, and it'll only sustain at this point. They're going to pop a huge rating on Wednesday. You kidding me?
Come on. And this is Moxley in the main event. That's a 2 million right there.
Dude. Are you kidding me? We're getting it on free television. This is the blessed timeline.
It is very well said. It's an exciting time to be a wrestling fan. And War, take us home, man. Your thoughts on obviously the return of Adam Cole and D-Bry.
And I spilled all my guts on the women, so that's all right. Apologies for the red, but
no, I love the red. You're coming back, bro. I love it.
It's very, you know, it's a very passionate subject for me. Bill and Mike already said everything very eloquently. I think all I need to add here. What, Bill? You're very eloquent. What are you?
I don't take compliments very well. So
thank God. You know, I used to do podcasts with people who are like, what does eloquent mean? So there you go. It's like
that English degree from Rutgers better fucking pay off one day.
Nice.
Oh boy. I relate. I think all that I really want to add, and this was my biggest chest swelling moment, is when I realized that Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole were just free from an environment that wherein they felt stunted. Adam Cole, maybe we'll hear stories. You know, he did tease story time with Adam Cole. Maybe we'll hear, but you know, Daniel Bryan's dissatisfaction with WWE was. It's something he carried even when he was doing fucking the press tour for WrestleMania this year, right? He was, you know, he's like, you know, I have to feel something. I'm not sure if I felt it, you know, last time. You know, like, holy shit. This is a guy who loves the business. He loves wrestling. That's what he's all about. He said previously he wants to leave the business in a better spot than when he came in. And I sincerely believe he's looking at guys like Christian and Brody and so on, you know, guys who were told, you're done. We're pigeonholing you here. And he's like, I want to take control of my legacy. I want to take control of what I'm doing. And look at these guys. They're going to AEW. Christian is main eventing. He's doing his own thing. He was told, just like me, you'll never wrestle again. I proved them wrong, came back, and I'm wrestling, but they won't let me do what I do, what I want to do. Daniel Bryan, as much as the Yes Movement and everything was so important for WWE, he will go down in history as one of their greatest fumbles. How do you fumble the return of beloved, unironically beloved, Daniel Bryan? How do you fumble his return from a career-ending injury? Put him in a fucking feud with Big Cass. Out the gate.
W. Morrissey to you.
W. Morrissey. Nothing against him, but you know, and then when you finally get to the feud that the people want, Daniel Bryan and The Miz, you can't even get that right. You put the wives involved for some reason. It was the absolute, and then when you're like, it's not working, let's turn him heel. A lesser man than Daniel Bryan would have failed at the heel turn. Daniel Bryan made it special because he is special. And he's going to be in an environment where he will be perceived as special. You want to know how WWE treats its special people? Tonight on Raw, Jeff Hardy was running after the 24/7 title. Jeff Hardy, a guy who comes out to this very day to a huge reaction from the crowd where kids still wear the makeup.
Where Rob still does that thing.
Every single time.
You have, if I hear the music, I do it.
Well, but we all do.
Oh, well, that's, I mean, right. God, there's another guy. They remember the Hardys coming back at WrestleMania. One of my favorite returns I've watched. I watch that like 3 times a year. It's so
memorable.
Awesome. And nothing.
Nothing.
And now Matt Hardy's in AEW. Jeff Hardy's going to go there in 2 years.
The point that I'm trying to make ultimately is that I was thrilled to see Daniel Bryan in an environment where I know he's going to thrive. And he's probably going to fight Daniel Garcia, and knowing that, I can die a happy man.
Call him his son.
Oh, wow. Now the 2.0 guys called Matt Martel, whatever he's calling himself, they called him our son first.
Well, Tony Khan brought that
the
up.
The laws of, you know, what is it? Takesies? What is it? Takesie-backsies. Well, he took it first, so there's no takesie-backsies, whatever. That's how it works in Canada. You stake your claim on a plot of land and it's yours. It's just as simple
plan
as
that. Flag.
Daniel Garcia belongs to 2.0.
Canada's weird. But listen, talk about two guys. Yeah, I guarantee you, Tony Khan sat there. He's like, well, I know who Daniel Bryan's going to face in his first match.
Oh, yeah.
2.0. That's Adam. Have them go, because that's what they do. But yeah, I agree. And they're going to he's going to wrestle in Japan and Mexico, I'm sure. And
PWG. He'll, you know what? I would flip if he went back to Ring of Honor. I like, just if only for some special matches. Yeah. Punk is there too, you know. Look, hey, oi, you know, Roosh right now, he's injured. You know, he's medically not cleared to wrestle, but, you know, there's a lot of rumblings backstage that he might be in a, oh, I lost my smile kind of situation, you know. And his contract is coming up at the end of the year, and he's supposed to be injured for the rest of the year. All signs are pointing to him not re-signing. So that means his family hits the bricks too. That means Ring of Honor is going to have some. It's going to have some money. It's going to have some money left over to pay some people.
I mean, they have a lot of money,
but they'll have salaries, like actual budgeted salaries that are going to open up. I wouldn't count Ring of Honor out of it just yet. Out of the Forbidden Door stuff.
Yeah, they should. I mean, apparently the AEW guys are always putting it over. Like, yeah, Ring of Honor is huge to us. Like.
Of course.
We're totally cool with them. And I think they just got to pull the trigger.
It's just a question of when, if you ask me.
Yeah, the way things are going, I'm all about it. I love it when companies build bridges instead of tearing each other down, man. So this is great to see. Guys, thank you so much for taking a few minutes so late at night. Guys, thanks for sticking around in the chat. We very much appreciate it. Before we get out of here, let's get that shameless promo out of the way. We're all about it. Mike, tell everyone about a little something called the Closet Champion.
Closet Champion podcast, everything from top 10 lists to state of wrestling, predictions, reviews, all that good stuff everywhere in between. Facebook and Twitter at Closet Champ. You can download and listen to the podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Anchor, Spotify, Apple, all the big ones. I'm going to be writing for the Pop Break, Bill's website, doing some Survivor reviews. That's coming up toward the end of September. September 22nd is the debut.
I did get your email, and I'm going to respond to that.
Cool. And I say I might be doing some wrestling writing too, but I haven't confirmed that, so I didn't want to throw that out on the air. But yeah, doing a little bit of that as well. Very excited to get back to writing. And that's about it. Yeah, Facebook, Twitter, at Closet Champ. Follow me. I follow back. All that good stuff.
Love it. Great job, Mike, as always. In the chat, great show, gentlemen. Thank you, Michael, for tuning in. Andrew, thank you. Incredible, amazing, awesome. Thank you guys so much. Speaking of incredible, amazing, and awesome, let's throw it to Lay Editor-in-Chief, Mr. Billy Drip Drip. What do you got for?
Oh, Jesus.
Fuck you and that name, brother. God damn it. I hate when you call me that. Like, I seriously don't like it. But anyway, if you must follow me on Twitter, I am at BodkinWrites, WRITES. It's mostly just wrestling stuff and retweeting stuff from thepopbreak.com. We're celebrating our 12-year anniversary at the end of this month. And if you're wondering, yes, Pop Break is a play off the movie Point Break, starring Keanu Reeves, which just celebrated its 30th anniversary. I probably should write something about that, you know, just thinking of it now on a podcast. But anyway, we are thepopbreak.com. We're publishing every single day. We're talking about movies, television, music. We're covering concerts again in a very safe manner. I'll be covering Pearl Jam headlining See Here Now in Asbury Park, New Jersey with my Good Bunny managing editor Al Manarino coming up in a week. Also, we're doing anime, pro wrestling, digital trends. We're on Twitter at The Pop Break, on Instagram at The Pop Break, /popbreak.com, all spelt out, on Facebook. I am the co-host of the Socially Distanced Podcast, which drops every single Friday on Anchor, Google, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. I hope co-hosted with the aforementioned Al Manarino. We are in our What If review series, which we drop every single week, and that's a lot of fun if you join us there. And of course, Pop Break has a whole bunch of hubs you can find on those same streaming platforms. The Breakcast, which has stuff on movies and music and on pro wrestling. And then we have And the Winner Still Is, a Way Too Early Oscar podcast. Those are our two movie podcasts. And we have Pop Break TV, which is our catch-all for all the things for television, which I also co-host a podcast on that called TV Break, which airs the first Wednesday of every month.
Boom. There it is. All right, Mr. Warren Hayes, heck of a debut, my man. Let's get that shameless promo in there.
Thank you. Honestly, thank you, you guys, for inviting me. This was a lot of fun. You know, it's always fun to talk wrestling with other people, because I always, you know, I talk into the void. So it's a lot of fun to actually chat with people and interact. It was a lot of fun. You guys are fantastic, and it would be my pleasure to come back anytime. Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, I record my podcast live on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. It's called the Mr. Warren Hayes Show, featuring Mr. Warren Hayes. That's me. Talk about the week in wrestling. I talk about the things that I feel like talking about. It's just as simple as that. We do that for a couple of hours, and it's also available the very next day on your favorite podcast application, as well as an audio thing. But if you want to go check that out, youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. Subscribe, damn it.
Hit that button. Smash that subscribe button. Guys, stellar panel. Thanks for staying up late. And guys, like we always say here on the BCP, everyone stay safe, stay positive, take care of each other. We out. Peace.